And we return on this Thursday afternoon, Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Bonnie, I'm sure you're aware that March is Women's History Month.
Of course.
Being a woman, you would know that.
Yes.
Well, it was officially designated by President Carter in 1980. And this hour, we visit with two dynamic women who've made great impact on their community and, in fact, the nation. First, we have Marielena Torraño. She's an active member of the esteemed Council on Foreign Relations, the founding president of the National Hispana Leadership, and earned the 2013 Latina Pioneer of the Year Award. Welcome to you, Marielena.
Thank you, Joseph. Nice
good
to
see
be
you.
Here.
Good
yeah,
to see
hear
you.
Your voice now. I see the faces.
Oh,
good to
too
have
bad.
You. Good to have you. Also with us is Dr. Vilma Biaggi. She's a breast cancer specialist, but she's much more. Dr. Biaggi is the owner and rebuilder of the classic Art Deco Cadet Hotel on South Beach with Pied-à-Terre Restaurant. And the hotel was first built 73 years ago. Welcome to you.
Thank you very much. It's up to pleasure being here.
Marielena, I'd like to start with you. I was going to start with some of your accomplishments and ask you about them. But, you know, since we've talked, since you're here in the studio, I'm going to change everything around and
Absolutely.
Start. Absolutely. Okay?
Okay.
I'd like to start about you emigrating to the United States. You were born in Havana. Tell us about those circumstances and very interesting story you told us before.
Well, it was, I was born in Havana. I'm 76 years old, and I would say that the future of my family changed in a couple of 5 minutes when on Mother's Day 1960, my family, I was for a first time mother for a first time, and my mother, my brother was in school at Georgia Tech, and so there were parents and my husband and child. And we see a jeep arriving. We had a home in the beach by the water. A jeep arriving with military gear, guys. So they get off, all three of them, and they say that they're intervening the house, was my father's house, in the name of the revolution. And we look at each other like, okay. And then they wanted to inspect everything. They went around the house. I took them around and checked things. And it seemed like they were like, oh. But when the face just went blank was when they got to my room. I opened a closet. I had hats. I live on the beach. I need hats, right? I says, do you really wear all those hats? I said, do you want to take some to your wife? So they took cars with them. My brother had a motorcycle, and they took it. And I said, well, why don't you take my son's little cycle. So after that, we got over the impact of what we witnessed and were part of. And they put a sign by the door that says the house has been intervened by the Cuban Revolution. It was just a matter of deciding when to leave.
And so you left
long
after?
And we left July, my parents' day, a little bit longer, July 30th, arrived in Miami. And then in March 31st, my 17-year-old brother from Georgia Tech, without knowing, and my husband, who was 23, 24 at the time, joined the Bay of Pigs.
Oh.
And I remember we drove them in Coconut Grove, what is now the Coconut Grove Bank. The CIA had a house there, and they were gone.
Dr. Biaggi, tell us more about your early years.
My years began in Argentina, born in Argentina from European parents. My mother was Armenian. My father was Italian. They met, and they decided to be missionaries.
Hence Biaggi.
Biaggi. Italian. And my mother, Berejiklian, which is Armenian. So they decided they were going to become missionaries. And we grew up in many places. My early years were basically in Peru, in the Amazon.
Catholic missionaries?
No. Protestant.
Protestant, oh.
Seventh-day Adventist, to be exact.
Oh, okay.
They were not preachers. They were in the health. My father was a graduate from Cook County Hospital in Chicago, who my mother helped him being a nurse to become a doctor.
That's a busy place.
Yes. And came back and worked for many years. And they decided they needed to take us to send us to school, to dormitories, because they were more or less our teachers, because we were moving from side to side, and my mother was our teacher, and our piano lessons were given there. Everything was very domestic. And they sent me to music lessons, and I told her that I wanted to be a musician. So my mother said, you know, my darling, be practical. If you want to have fun, play the piano. But if you want to put food on your table, be a nurse. So I became a nurse.
Not a doctor, of course.
No. My brothers, yes. Not yes. Me, a nurse. So I became a nurse. And my brothers became dentists. So after I became a nurse and worked many years as a nurse, I decided that I did want to be a doctor. And being a nurse, I helped myself to go through school. And I was so fortunate all the time that in this wonderful country, there wasn't a door that I could not open if I did my efforts to open it. Not one door was closed, either for being a foreigner or for being a woman or for being too young or too old or too soon or too late. Everything was possible. And that's why I became a doctor, and I did two different specialties. And what brings me today to have the most wonderful practice in diagnosis of breast cancer. But we have a breast center, which for general diagnosis is not only for breast cancer, but we offer all kinds of, even more extensive than just the diagnosis of that, because it's a woman's wellness.
This is in Aventura.
In Aventura, right. And has fulfilled my life in such a way. In such a way that I talk with the highest and the deepest joy when I talk about my practice. And it gave me so much joy that the overflow of that is to bring alive what you mentioned, the Cadet Hotel. It accidentally was purchased by a family in 1986, so we owned it for a long time. And my children grew up, went away from home to college to make their lives. So I ended up having a property, was totally dilapidated. And walking through that property, totally dilapidated, and it was condemned at that time, we found the history of being the home of the cadets. That's the reason of the name Cadets. It was built to be something else in 1941, and it was going to be the Deluxe Hotel. But in the 7th of December of 1941, Pearl Harbor happened. So Air Force sent their cadets to be stationed in South Beach, in many of the hotels.
Mm-hmm. With the Army and, Air Corps then, I believe.
Yes, the Army Air Corps and Air Force. Mm-hmm. And the Air Force sent their cadets, that's why the name of the cadets, stayed until 1949, which the Air Force returned it to the original owners, but always kept the name. And ahead of them was Clark Gable. And we found this memorabilia when we were digging into the crawl space and the rebuilding of the hotel. So it has become a quest that I'm so involved with it that I cannot imagine to do without. And at the same time, my practice is so wonderful that I cannot do without.
So Clark Gable was stationed there.
He was.
And stayed in the.
Stayed there ahead of the cadets for a period about 2 years.
And that was Suite 224?
Yes, correct.
Is that open this weekend?
Well, it for special people and special reservations.
It may be booked. Mary Alina, you've done so much. You've had such an illustrious career. It's mind-boggling, actually. But I'll start with the National Hispana Leadership that you founded in 1987 to address the disparity of representation of Latinas in leadership positions. So how do you go about implementing this, and what have you achieved?
How do I go about creating?
First, creating it.
Conceptualizing.
Okay.
First, having the experience of why it was needed. I went to work for Jimmy Carter in his first and only term, And I was associate director of what used to be the Office of Economic Opportunity, OEO, and then became the Community Services Administration. And as an appointee, we gather with other appointees and, you know, share ideas and so on and so forth. And I saw that among the 40 or 50 appointees that I was meeting with, there was only three Hispanic women, Mexican, both of them. And I said, I don't like this picture, because why not more women? Now, I was appointed because Alfredo Duran, I don't know if the name still rings a bell, was the first Cuban American chair of the Florida Democratic Party. Mm. And he got a call from because he was so helpful to Jimmy Carter, got a call to refer somebody for X position, and I went and I got it.
And you were the first Cuban-born yes. appointee to a Democratic administration.
No, because the only one before me was the head of the refugee Cuban Refugee Center. It was Republican, and he was served out of here. But he didn't have Senate confirmation, which I did for my third presidential appointment. So I think I'm still the first in
okay.
any gender.
Okay.
So, okay. Then I, you know, the way that things happen, there is such serendipity. Coors was planning to move to the East Coast. And they wanted to have develop a program for women, for Hispanic women, because they're the ones that buy the beer in the market, the supermarket. So I'm sitting, remember Eddie Olmos? Eddie Olmos was giving a shot to a group and nobody was paying attention. And then when he finished, I asked a question, what does it take for Hispanics to have to achieve national leadership? He says, well, it would take women like you, because everybody else that was in La La Land, it would take women like you to make it happen. Now, the guy next to me, the course guy, says, I want to talk to you. And immediately says, just give me a develop a program to assist Hispanic women in whatever field nationally.
Mary Elena, we're going to stop there, especially because you mentioned Coors, because we have a lot of beer on the show today. I don't know. We need to take a break on today's topical currents. Okay. We're speaking with Mary Elena Taranio and Dr. Vilma Biaggi. And let's take that break and we'll be right back. And welcome back to Topical Currents. It's Women's History Month.
It is.
So we're celebrating with Maria Elena Taranio. She's an active member of the esteemed Council on Foreign Relations now and the founding president of the National Hispana Leadership and much more. And Dr. Vilma Biaggi. She is the founder of the Diagnostic Radiology in Aventura and much more, owner of the Cadet Hotel on South Beach.
I'd like to have Dr. Biaggi tell us about these breakthroughs that her diagnostic radiology office is implementing to the molecular level. That's
what
smaller
is this,
than cells.
Cenobrite?
Cenobrite. Is it new technology in the U.S., very new technology. It's been more established in Europe because all the clinical trials have been done in Europe for technical reasons. But I'm so excited to have it, even though it's kind of late in my life to start a new technology. We all here between girls confess our age. I'm 72. And it's maybe not a time for us to really realistically start such a project, but it's so exciting to start a new, such a breakthrough concept. We have beautiful mammographies. We've been improving our services so much from the time I first started with Full Field Digital, and then we call it 3D, which is a better yet. However, this is a different concept. There is an injection of iodine, and it works at a molecular level.
What about for those allergic to iodine?
There is another type of iodine that is prepare for that. And if they happen to be allergic for that, there is preparation that it could be done prior to the test. And we do, you know, elderly people and with diabetic people, we study their kidney function. So it's something that is very well regulated. So the ideally, it's a mammogram. It doesn't really take any more than an injection of iodine with a special injector. And in 2.5 minutes, it can be the breast can be exposed through a normal mammogram. And the images are amazing and practically instant. The washout occurs in about 8 to 9 minutes. These are for lesions that we suspect or high-risk patients. Or very dense breast that per se they have family history or genetic mutations in their families, they become a high-risk patient. And we explain to them is because realistically, not everybody can have an MRI done every 6 months or every year all the time. So this is a way to simplify that and give them this security and the safety of that. There is a 97% is very sensitive. The only thing that changes the is a specificity, but the sensitivity is there. So with knowing there is only 2 or 3 false negatives is very, very good.
Is maybe there a website associated with that? People could get more information?
Is breastdiagnosticsmiami.com.
Breastdiagnosticsmiami.com.
We'll have a link to that on our website. Is this also for breast cancer survivors, that test?
Oh, yes, definitely.
And you are a survivor yourself.
Yes, and definitely it is because it brings them a lot of comfort to know that it's not coming back. And another use that is used a lot now for young girls, especially if they have certain familial predisposition different than genetic, which is different, and they do infertility treatment, they're being bombarded with a lot of hormonal support. And the infertologists like to know that before they incur into all these treatments, that they are very well closely supervised prior to that. And this week we had very interesting cases on that end. So they are very safe starting their treatment.
Can I have that website again?
Breastdiagnosticsmiami.com.
Okay.
I'd like to have both of you talk a little bit about your experience with the supposed glass ceiling, especially in regard to Hispanic women. Marilena?
Yeah, Joe, but before we finish, I really would like to share information on the Institute.
Okay.
Because we don't get too many women from Miami. Okay. I found that, especially in Miami, I was confronted by two glass ceilings. The one that women had that was so much talked about and goes to Gloria Steinem and so on and so forth. And then because of the character, the behavior, the culture of Cuban men and Latin American men, but we didn't have that many then.
The machismo,
right. You got it. Let's cut through. They were very inflexible. They resented women. I was at Eastern Airlines for 9 years, and I left before being able to even get, and I was making $13,000. I'm talking 1970, 71, 72. And my fellow Cubans were jealous, felt insecure, that I was getting publicity. That was my job, do marketing to Hispanics. And made my life pretty impossible, and I left. And again, the only one in my life that fully supported me, and maybe that's why I felt so madly in love, was Leslie Pantin. He had no insecurities whatsoever. Sometimes he was, when we got married, he was called Leslie Torano. And he thought that was amusing. From that job, $13,000, I got an offer from Jackson Memorial Hospital and UM to open the Office of Hispanic Affairs because Hispanics didn't want to go to Jackson. So, and then I was paid $22,000. And then when I went to Washington to work with Carter, it was $37,000. So in 1 year, I went from 13 to 37.
So you're saying there are two glass ceilings for Hispanic women, but you seem to have broken through both of them.
Well, yeah, I did. I did because it was not something that I was going to put up with. And what I had the luck to, and I wasn't threatening. So So I think your phone's
We'll let it. We'll let it. Just I think it's easier if we just let it go for now.
All right.
How about you, Dr. Vilma Biagi? Was there a glass ceiling in your life?
I thought it being invisible but breakable. Of course, you know, when I was, I'm telling you, this 1972 to 1976, most of my fellow workers were, my fellow residents and interns were guys. So what I had to win is their friendship by being very feminine, by being a great friend, share my bunk bed, share moments with them. And I have to tell you, by then, I was a mother of two. And they become like the uncles to my daughters because they will do math on Sundays when we were on call, and they will help my kids doing the homework, and my kids will spend time with me in the hospital. So it's, I became a very soft contender, however I was, because at the time of truth, when the end of the year came and you looked for a position, that comes to the throat. But I never really had a true problem. I never had that much, because maybe in medicine, you can give a little bit more of you. Maybe in medicine it's a little bit different. I don't know. I cannot really describe a glass ceiling. I know there was one. I never felt like it was oppressing one. And I kind of globalized it in this nation, in this great nation. I never had a door that I could not open. I had so many opportunities and wonderful people to trust in me. When I was talking to Maria Elena today, I said, I kind of feel offended. More American women should have the same opportunities that Latin women have. What about brilliant women? And she gave me this explanation, and I take it. It's, I think it's an individual vision of your image of you.
That's right.
And empowerment comes with knowledge. No one can give you the power if you don't seek it, and if you don't learn, and you become confident and respectful of others and sharing of others. So it becomes a nature to have that power.
Now, when can people hear you play piano at the lobby of the Cadet Hotel? And also, when can I reserve that Clark Gable suite in room 224?
Well, you just have to make a special arrangement.
It's cadethotel.com.
Yes.
Okay.
Mary Elena, you've done so much, and we haven't even gotten to any of it. I wish we had so much longer, but we're coming to the... We still haven't talked about creating the National Hispana Leadership, not to mention the fact that you're an active member of the Council of Foreign Relations. And so
very exciting.
Very exciting. Tell us about that and give us any information that you want us.
Let's get the information on the Institute out. And that is women 22 and 25 women are selected from the country, and they must have local leadership. They must have a track record. Then they go, the first week is like to know yourself and know others, and you have 22 women from different backgrounds. So they spend 1 week in one of the missions in California, and they have psychologists and facilitators.
Is there a website associated with that?
Yes, NHLI. Okay. Then they go to Harvard for 10 days. Then they go to the Center for Creative Leadership, which is the top leadership development institute or center in the country. And then the last week they spend it in Washington, meeting with the agency or the Congress people, the program policy people that they would be dealing with.
Well, we're going
and
to
what
to
is
going.
That website?
NHLI.
NHLI.
National Hispana Leadership Institute. And I urge
dot
women
org.
That org, yes. I urge women in Miami to look for it, because it makes all the change in the world.
I wish we had much longer. Maria Elena Taranio is the founding chairman of the National Hispana Leadership Institute, an appointee of the Carter, Clinton, and Bush administrations, and an active member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And it's been a pleasure having you. We'll have a link to your website on our website.
Thank you.
And Dr. Vilma Biagi is the founder of Diagnostic Radiology in Aventura and the owner and rebuilder of the Cadet Hotel. That's cadethotel.com. We'll have links to that.
And that's breastdiagnosticsmiami.com.
We'll have all those links. It's been a pleasure. Maybe you'll come back sometime. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Food and Dining up next. And we return. It's Topical Currents, Thursday edition. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. Food and Dining Thursday has finally arrived. And Linda Gassenheimer joins us, my friend, Cordon Bleu chef, author, syndicated columnist. And Linda, so our topic today is beer, an upcoming festival in Coconut Grove, I believe.
Right. Hello, Bonnie.
Hi.
Bonnie caught you eating? Why are you eating on an eating program? Well, headline from the Herald. Beer business bubbles up. Craft breweries are opening their doors here in South Florida. So, of course, why not have a craft beer festival? And that's just what's happening this weekend, as you mentioned, Joe. And it's called Sprung.
S-P-R-U-N-G.
Yes, Sprung. And it's going to take place Saturday in Coconut Grove. And our guest is Buns and Buns chef and partner, Reuven Sugarman. And he's going to be participating in the festival and brought us some beer-friendly food to taste right here in front of us, which Bonnie is already eating.
Now, what's the name of the...
Buns and Buns.
Buns and Buns.
Buns and Buns. Welcome, Chef.
Thank you. We could do something with that, but we won't.
Very happy to be here.
We're going on to the next guest. We have two guests here. Tony Albello. He's the chairman of... Who's eating? He's the chairman...
It was the chef, I'm happy to say.
...of the festival, and he's here to talk to us about craft beers. Welcome, Tony Albello.
I'm glad to be here, Linda.
Okay, and we'd love to have you, our listeners, join us. Do you have any questions for our guest? And what's your favorite craft beer? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576.
So Old Milwaukee doesn't count, I guess.
800-743-WLRN. Join us. Or do we have email, Bonnie?
We do, and we actually already have one, which we'll get to at some point. It's radio@WLRN.org. We also have Twitter at Topical Currents.
Okay, great. Okay, and also, of course, with us is our favorite wine guy, but maybe we have to call him a beer guy today. Fred Tasker, he's joining us by Skype, and you can read Fred's wine column. That's in today's Miami Herald. Fred, can I ask what we're drinking today?
I'm going to talk about beer. Can you imagine?
Well, I don't know. Okay, well, let's go to Chef Sugarman. Buns and Buns, an unusual concept name. Tell us, what does it mean? What is it about?
It's a globally inspired genre of a restaurant where we implement bread back into the mix, you know, and we create the first thought of bread, and you know, it's, we traveled the world and we created some recipes based on inspiration and created a story behind it. And
so let me ask you, Buns and Buns, can we get something else to eat there besides bread?
Absolutely. Buns and Buns is our general term for what we wanted to call our restaurant, but it's a bread-based restaurant where we pair bread with great beer, great food, and a fast-paced environment.
So actually, bread has yeast in it. Mm-hmm. It has some beer does as well. Tony's saying yes, Tony.
100%, yeah, yeast.
So bread and beer, why not?
And that's where it all started. Every cuisine, every different culture starts with bread. Everybody has their bread.
Well, now you mentioned you traveled the world.
Yeah.
Now, was that to collect recipes or what happened?
It was. You know, we came up with the idea, the concept, but we had nothing to build from it, so we traveled to London, Istanbul, Hong Kong, and Bangkok in search of inspirational recipes to implement a worldly type of cuisine.
So what were some of your experiences traveling around?
Oh, man, we ate all day long.
I meant your food experience. Okay.
All day long. You know, we woke up very early, walked everywhere all over the streets, and ate food all day long. Ate, drank, walked, ate, drank, walked all day.
And so you collected recipes this way?
Not necessarily recipes, but inspiration of what they did indigenously and incorporated those ideas into our own creation.
So give us some examples. What were some of those?
For example, the lamb ribs. You know, I tasted lamb ribs in London. I tasted lamb ribs in Istanbul. And all of them had different characteristics. So I wanted to bring that back into our concept and utilize lamb ribs in our own point of view based on grills, bread, sauces, spices, fun and adventure.
So you serve obviously lamb ribs with fun and adventure in them.
Yes.
So what were some of the other ideas you brought back?
Let's see. We brought back the steam bun from Asia when we were in Hong Kong. We tasted buns all day long for 4 days. We walked around Hong Kong eating buns and all sorts of different types of sauces and dippings and how they prepared their buns. And we came up with our own steam bun, which pairs with a lot of our recipes as well. And yeah.
Where is Buns and Buns?
It is located 5748 Sunset Place, across Sunset.
Across from Sunset Place.
Right, right.
Yeah, and it's the kind of restaurant where you go in and you order. Chef is eating his own food. I'm watching him eat his own food.
He also said it was fast-paced.
It's an over-the-counter concept. Oh, so we like to, you know, we promote that. You order from the chef's bar, you come up, you can interact, engage with the chef, see what they're doing.
So there's not waiters or waitresses?
No waiters, no waitresses. There's food runners who act as dual roles. You know, you sit down, you pay later, and you can always order more.
That was an interesting concept because I did go there and test it out. You order, but you're ordering from somebody, but the kitchen's right there, so you can see what they're doing. And then you sit down and they bring it to your table, but you haven't paid yet. When you order, you haven't paid yet. And you know, I was thinking to myself, well, will people walk out?
They've tried and they have.
But so then at the, in case you want to order something else, they'll come and they'll give you your bill at the table.
Exactly, like beer, you know, craft beers, you know, and then that's what we want to implement, you know, drink more.
Okay, well, now let's talk about the food you've got here because we're all eating it. So tell me what I'm eating.
Well, you've got here a roasted heirloom tomato salad with burrata. And we roast our heirloom tomatoes in a wood stone oven over fire with a little bit of our own homemade ciabatta olive oil croutons with a micro arugula from a local farm and compressed watermelon with sherry vinegar.
Let's go slowly here. You said, what is a compressed watermelon?
So pretty much I compact a whole watermelon in compression in a cryovac machine. So it makes it the cell molecules expand, and then when it takes all the oxygen and CO2 out and seals the bag, it actually changes the whole entire.
And it compresses the flavor as
everything inside, so you have a much more compact piece of watermelon with a lot more flavor and sugar. Everything is changed completely of its.
And there's avocado here.
Mm. And fresh avocado.
And you said burrata. Now let's tell people what burrata is.
Burrata is a fresh made mozzarella cheese, and inside is a mozzarella curd, and they roll it inside, so it's fresh and raw mozzarella,
which is wonderful. And so then there's these chips that everyone's eating here nonstop. Yes. So what are these?
Sweet potato chips made fresh in house every day with a little bit of Maldon salt from the Sea of Maldon.
Okay.
What are those croutons though?
This is our ciabatta.
And that's the ciabatta.
Mm-hmm. So we pull it with our fingers and then we fry it in Portuguese olive oil.
Ah. I'm eating. It's very crunchy.
It's very
deliciosa.
So what are you going to be making at the festival?
The festival, I'm going to make
Chef, excuse me. You're going to have to stop eating for a minute.
Sorry, they're still good.
They are addictive.
Yes, they are.
They are, once you pop. At the festival, I'm doing a Brooklyn brown ale marinated chicken thigh with black bean jus. And
black bean jus? What is that?
J-U-S.
And what
it's like au jus.
It's an au jus. Yeah, it's a sauce. And
but it's a sauce from black beans.
Yeah, exactly. It's so
good. It's a sauce that you cook the black beans in.
From black beans, it's got a little bit of squid ink in it to fortify the richness and give it a nice darker complexion.
Oh wow, that sounds good. Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds wonderful. Let's go, Tony's. Let me ask you. You're the organizers of Sprung. What is Sprung?
Well, besides being the past tense of spring, it's a festival where we've collected 150 different craft beers, and there's no coincidence that it takes place in spring because one of the cool things about craft beer is that there's also a lot of seasonal beers. In the fall, we'll have beers that we won't have in the spring and summer, so we have a large selection of spring and summer craft beers at the festival, in addition to a lot of great local beers, a lot of home brewers, the Gold Coast Culinary Experience, where the chef is participating. So there's a lot to do. It's just not about trying 150 different beers at the festival.
So the entrance price of the festival allows you to taste as much beer as you want?
As much as you want, as many times as you want. Now, we do practice responsibility. We have contracted with shuttle bus services that will take people home in case they go overboard and things like that, which is possible. It can happen. But really, the reason why we have some of the cooking components and educational components within the festival is for people to learn more and to do things in between all the beer drinking.
So there's going to be four other chefs. Sugarman's going to be doing a cooking demo.
Right.
On stage.
So there's going to be a stage there. So who are the other chefs?
So at the Gold Coast Culinary Experience, we have Chef Sugarman from Buns & Buns.
That's a demonstration center.
A demonstration center.
Okay, right.
And we have Chef Sugarman. We have George Patty from Meat in Isla Morada. We have Richard Howes from Sakaya Kitchen. And we have the fourth one is...
Okay, he'll come up with it in a minute.
I left my glasses on.
You left your glasses on. All right, we'll come up with the we'll get the answer for you, the four chef. And but there'll be other food there now. But they will have to pay for the food.
Yes, the demo's free. All the beer's free. And then if they want to grab other food outside, they can go ahead and buy that food.
All right, we're going to have to take a break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with chef partner of Buns & Buns in South Miami, Chef Reuben Sugarman, who's still eating, and Sprung Festival organizer Tony Albello. We'll take a short break here, and we'll
it's
be back
It's a good advertisement.
With more.
He likes his own food.
He likes his food. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking about the craft beer festival called Sprung. It's going to be held this Saturday in Coconut Grove. Our guests are chef partner of Buns & Buns restaurant in South Miami, Reuben Sugarman. And he's going to be participating in the festival. We've been eating some of his beer-friendly food. He's been eating most of it, actually. And also with us today is Tony Albello. He's the chair of the festival, and he's here to talk about some craft beers. But before we do that, Tony Albello, you had the name of the other chef that's going to be demonstrating?
Yes, it's Chef I Eat There Every Day. Chef Jimmy from Jimmy's restaurant in Wynwood. It's a Puerto Rican-inspired restaurant, and he's our fourth chef.
And he's the fourth chef. Wonderful. Well, if you want some dinner in minutes, let's talk about that before we drink the beer. It's a quick dinner. It's called Curried Chicken Pot Pie, and it only takes 30 minutes to make. And the reason it's so short is I use roasted chicken or any kind of cooked chicken. Rotisserie chicken will be great. Add a little curry powder, gives it that little taste of India. And to make things easy, I add some frozen diced onion and green bell peppers and some sliced mushrooms, so there's not a lot of prep involved. And so you add a little flour to a pan, you add some chicken broth, some frozen peas, cut the chicken into bite-sized pieces, put that all together. And yes, I'm allowing you, Joe, I know you have a little problem with your pie dough. So you can buy already made, ready to bake pie dough and put it on the top and bake it. And that'll take about 20 minutes in a preheated oven. Now, if you want to even shorten that time, then you can just put some breadcrumbs on top instead of the pie crust. So that complete recipe and a photo, it's at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. So Fred, beer, what are we doing?
I'm absolutely astonished that suddenly it's cool or even sophisticated to drink beer in Miami. Now, this has been going on around the country for 10 years or so, but this is new in South Florida. I remember about a decade ago that Miami had exactly two brew pubs. And I went to one of them, the old Gordon Biersch on Brickell, which is since closed. And I asked the brewmaster what his most popular beer was, and I was expecting something exotic and fabulous. And he just looked kind of sad and said that the most popular one was the one that he brewed purposely to taste exactly like Bud Light. He said that was what people wanted. But boy, I guess, Tony, you can attest to the fact that that has really changed.
Oh, in a big way.
And today, South Florida is such a hotbed of brew pubs that were featured in this month's issue of Food and Wine magazine. So, Tony, I wonder, before we go further, could you briefly define craft beer? What is craft beer?
Well, craft beer, by definition, by the Brewers Association, is a brewery that makes less than 7 million barrels or brews less than 7 million barrels a year and is more than 50% American-owned. Now, there's other beers that are craft in style or nature but are owned by bigger companies, like Goose Island, which was recently bought, which was a pure craft beer company but was recently purchased by Anheuser-Busch. And that kind of takes them out of the category a little bit, but they're still a great beer, still a craft beer. So the definition is technically strict, but it's kind of broad.
Okay. So, Fred, you're up in Michigan, and we're here with beer in the studio. So we're gonna just tell Fred what we're drinking here.
So we brought some spring and summer or very light beers today to try. Actually, one isn't even a beer, and one is half beer, and one is a full beer. But first, we have Lean and Kugel's Summer Shandy. It's an orange shandy. It's a half carbonated drink, like a Sprite, and half beer.
How's that designated on the cup?
It is L for Lean and Kugel's.
It doesn't taste... What would you say, Bonnie?
It tastes like a light beer or something because...
But it's not beer?
It is beer. It's about 50% beer and 50% like a Sprite, but orange flavored.
Kind of like lemonade.
It's a shandy. Yeah. Up north in the Midwest, they make shandies all the time. This is an orange shandy.
So, Fred, do you know about shandies?
Oh, sure. Those shandies you could get in England back when you were living there, Linda.
Oh, yeah. It was made with lemonade. Lemonade and beer.
That's what it tastes like. Exact same thing, except
And Chef's
orange.
Shaking his head because he's English.
It's sort of a beer sangria.
Yeah. And then next we have Abita Spring IPA. So it's a special IPA that they bring out just for the spring. It's an IPA, which is a...
What's an IPA?
IPA is an India Pale Ale, and that is a type of beer that was developed in the old days before refrigerated trucking and things of that nature.
Why is it so bitter?
Whoa!
Well, it's IPA is going to have much more hop characteristic, and the alcohol is also more prevalent than something like... I mean, you went from a shandy, which is a very, sweet. Very, very light sweet, to something that it has a more hoppy character... Like the Abita IPA. All IPAs are kind of in that nature.
I guess that sort of grows on you.
Fred, your opinion of IPAs?
You know, IPAs are the hot thing around the country right now, and brewers are competing to see who can put more hops into their beer. Up here in Michigan, my brother-in-law is a hops producer, and those people are going just crazy. They have beers that just keep getting bitter and bitter all along, and I've kind of got a taste for them. They're pretty good.
I guess you have to develop a taste.
Especially with something spicy like the curry dish you mentioned earlier. If it was really spicy, an IPA really tones down the heat on your tongue, and it's a fabulous match.
What about that aroma? It's almost like it has an aroma, like a perfume.
Yeah, I mean, all beers, beers are like wine, could be sniffed for the nose and the body and the mouthfeel.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, definitely. There's a whole... equally complex as wine, and that's one of the great things about beer. There's a school of thought that says, Fred, no offense, but that beer is better at pairing with food because of the carbonation, and that the carbonation cleans the palate much better.
Well, Fred takes care of that with champagne.
They say that especially about cheese and beer, but I think there's plenty of good taste to go around for both beer and wine.
And finally, I brought Fox Barrow. It's a pear cider.
That's not a beer,
it's a cider. Again, in Miami, it's hot all the time, so this is great to have on the beach, on the boat.
What is it made with? If it's not apples.
Pear.
Oh, it's pear.
It's a pear cider, yes.
You can make pears into a cider?
Apparently so, because they did it. So, I mean, I don't know the mechanics of doing it, but they did it. But it's from Crispin's sister company, Fox Barrel, Northern California. Phenomenal selection of ciders. And in Miami, when you're hot and if you're not a big, big beer drinker, this is a great option.
So
Tony, I understand that you've been kind of instrumental in the beer boom in Miami. Can you name a couple of the new brew pubs that are opening up now?
Yeah, well, late last year we had Wynwood Brewing open up right in the city of Miami, right in the Wynwood District. Earlier in the year, or really a year and a half ago, we had Schnebly's Winery opened up their brewery called Miami Brewing. They're down in Homestead. And next online, we have... Concrete Beach is opening up in Wynwood. We have Wakefield Brewing is opening up in Wynwood. There's a lot of breweries that from this time to 3 months, there'll probably be 5 more on hand.
Why so many in Wynwood?
Unfortunately, one of the problems that you have is since craft beers are limited to 7 million barrels a year, a lot of the brew pubs don't have enough volume to send their beer all around the country. So
if we
have it going on here in Michigan, you probably can't get it in Miami and vice versa.
Okay. You know, we could go on and on, but we're out of time.
And crunch and crunch and crunch.
And crunch and delicious and eat. It's been a very tasty week. Chef's still eating. Chef Reuben Sugarman, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And thanks for the great food.
Anytime.
Buns and Buns is at 5748 Sunset Drive, South Miami. That's opposite Sunset Place in South Miami. Tony Albello, thank you for joining us and for the great beers. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. My pleasure. I love being here.
Sprung will be held at Peacock Park in Coconut Grove Saturday, March 8th from 4 to 7 p.m. That's general admission. VIP admissions will be starting at 2:30. And you can go to igotsprung.com.
We hope you get sprung.
Okay, Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, great to be with you.
Great, likewise.
Okay, next week we'll be celebrating St. Patrick's Day with Martin Lynch, co-owner of John Martin's Irish Pub and Grill. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And that's today's program. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. Free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org. Information, links, and discussion at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. We return Monday for a look at what it's like to spend 17 years as a firefighter and paramedic. We'll have the author of Oh, So You're a Fireman. And today's calendar on this day, 1923, 91 years ago, the birth of announcer, ultimate sidekick, and MC Ed McMahon in Detroit. He was a former bingo caller and sidewalk pitchman. He flew 85 Marine combat missions in Korea. He died in 2009. And on this day in 1945, 69 years ago, the birth of actor, director, producer Rob Reiner, son of the late Carl Reiner in the Bronx, New York. Besides All in the Family, he co-wrote the first episode of Happy Days. And one more. On this day in 1981, 33 years ago, anchorman Walter Cronkite signs off the CBS Evening News for the final time. He first anchored in 1962. He too died in 2009. Our theme music created by Michael Levine. And we leave with Cronkite's conclusion to that final anchor broadcast, quote, "Old anchormen, you see, don't fade away. They just keep coming back for more. And that's the way it is, Friday, March 6th, 1981. I'll be away on assignment, and Dan Rather will be sitting here for the next few years." Rather, of course, sat there 24 years. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.